It's Will Sean Podcast. The internet cried out for two more blowhards, and they courageously answered that call. Armed with the weapon of wit, each week they're joined by guests to discuss movies, television, pop culture, and anything else that's pissing them off. Take it away, boys.
I'm Will Link.
And I'm Sean David.
And this is Will Sean Podcast?
Now 100% gluten-free. How you doing, Will?
Well, we had a little disappointed, a little sad.
Still a Zimmerman thing?
Still, no, not that. I'm off of that. That's yesterday's
now
news.
Now you're on to Carlos Danger.
Well, the actor Dennis Farina died.
That or that.
And I didn't know him, but I got to do a little kind of pseudo-interview with him once on the PM show with Larry Minetti. He was good friends with Larry Minetti. Now, how does this really affect my life?
Sure, you're going to tell us.
I was supposed to go to the big Minetti surprise birthday party this weekend.
Well, if he's listening to this, he'll know about it.
Well, the party's been canceled due to the death of his good friend Dennis Farina. So I'm going to miss out of seeing all the stars of the 80s and dine with them for an evening.
It'll be you and Robert Blake.
That would have been fantastic.
So, no, but it is sad news. Dennis
it's
Farina.
Sad news that Dennis Farina has died.
He was a great actor, and he started out as a cop.
Yeah.
Who came to acting later in life.
And he was great at playing both cops and crooks alike. And he was really, and I said this to him on the Minetti show when I spoke to him, he was really like an artist with profanity in the movies. Like a movie like Get Shorty. Like, it just, the way he says fuck is hysterical. Like, he's amazing with the insults or Midnight Run, you know.
What's the line, got anything to declare? Yeah, don't go to England.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't a profanity, but so Dennis Farina, you will be missed.
But he's been reincarnated as the royal baby, so
we're gonna get to that.
Well, in that case, what's going on in the world of Will Sean?
I want to thank Dylan Brody once again, our guest last week on our supersized 1 hour and 25 minute double special 75th quarter quill episode. He was a fantastic guest. He's a great guy. Want to remind you about his book Laughs Last, available on Amazon. And also, you know, usual Road to 222. Like us on Facebook.
We've been stalling on those Facebook.
Yeah, get on it, people.
Likes. A bunch of assholes.
I know you're all on Facebook. I see you there. Come on.
Yeah.
Click a button.
Like us.
Or else, you know, come to your house.
Exactly.
Give you the old Carlos Danger.
and who's our sponsor this week?
This week's episode is brought to you by Royal Baby, Royal Baby, future King of England, born on July 22nd, Royal fucking Baby.
And you're our own Royal Baby here, Sean.
Yes, that, for those of you who don't know, that is my birthday, so while Will gets to share a birthday with Kim and Kanye's trash, I share a birthday now with royalty.
To be fair, we will never live long enough probably to see this kid become King of England, but we will live long enough to see Northwest's sex tape.
You mean North goes South?
I can't wait.
Yeah. And one last note, the baby is in very solid company. It's myself, Alex Trebek, Albert Brooks, Willem Dafoe, and David Spade.
That's a... Oh,
and Franca Potenta, Run Lola Run.
Oh, I like her. Redeemed the David Spade with that.
Yeah.
On the show today, Comic-Con happened, and we didn't go again. Aubrey Plaza has a to-do list, which I'd like to be on. And there's a show on TV featuring another person named Will as a character. And he's pissing me off a little bit, and we're going to get into that. But first, we're very excited to have with us, he just wrote this terrific book, The Front Man, John Frechette.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. And a belated happy birthday to you, Sean.
Thank you very much. You know, some people have a birthday. Some people have a birthday weekend. I got a birthday month. So that's how this goes.
Awesome.
Welcome on the show.
You've continued a trend that we don't stop people from doing.
Do not stop people. It's a fantastic trend.
Of bringing us gifts. What have you brought us to drink?
I brought a bottle of Dogfish Head. I believe it's pronounced Sati. It is an ale brewed with black chai tea and juniper berries.
It's delicious. It's like if gin and, I don't know, beer had a baby.
All right.
It's very flavorful.
I can taste the chai, and I like chai.
I can taste the juniper.
And I can taste the berries.
Yeah, I can taste the berries. And why is Alyssa Vaughn texting me right now? We'll check you out later, Alyssa Vaughn. So, the front man.
Yes.
Well, before we delve into the book, let's get a little bit about your background, because I've known you through people and off and on throughout the years, but I was looking at the bio of you on the back of the book, and it seems like you've had a colorful... Tell us.
I guess as far as it pertains to the bio, I was very much into the punk scene when I was growing up in Bay Area.
Okay.
Just outside San Francisco. And spent virtually every weekend at this club called 924 Gilman in Berkeley.
In Berkeley. That's
yeah, right. Which is where Green Day and Rancid and...
I went to Berkeley, so yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know it well. All right. So when I was 13 years old, I started a band with a couple of my friends, and I think we were probably 14 when we first played 924 Gilman.
Wow.
And we never really... did much. We were on a compilation 7-inch that was put out by a label with some other punk bands, and I ended up falling in love with film and kind of changing my focus from music to film and began pursuing that, but my other friends continued doing music, and I went on tour with them one summer and did visual projections for them, which
Oh, nice.
I created. So I have a background in music, which ended up kind of lending itself to the book when I wrote it.
Now, had you thought about when you first started to find a love of film, had you been thinking for a long time of, and not that this is a film, this is a book, but did you think of ways to tell stories about, did you always want to tell stories about, like, the days playing music and stuff like that?
Not really. This book, I mean, the inception of it was actually, it was suggested to me as a movie. By a guest who has been on the show, who you were just talking about, Lorenzo Minetti.
Oh.
He and another mutual friend of ours, Nate Kelly, wanted to produce some low-budget movies, kind of in the vein of like a mumblecore sort of thing.
Okay.
So I got a phone call one day, several years ago at this point, from Nate and Lorenzo, and they knew my background, obviously, and they said, you know, John, we have this idea about an aging musician in Brooklyn who his longtime band breaks up and he doesn't know what he's going to do next. Take it and run with it.
Okay.
So I started, I immediately connected to it in the abstract. The theme of what do you do when your dreams don't work out accordingly?
Yes. You know, what happens? Can I answer that?
Yes.
You start a podcast.
Okay. Well, fantastic.
Change your dreams.
You change your dreams. Right. So, I could connect to that as somebody who had been, you know, struggling for years trying to write scripts and get movies made. That I think that's something that, whether you're creative or not, you do confront at some point in your life. You have this conception of, you know, who you might be, what you might become one day. And then you hit 30, 35, 40, whatever it is, and you start to assess where your life has actually taken you. And oftentimes, it's not what you imagined it would be.
What the hell are you talking about?
No, I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of the things in this book kind of hit home to me, because... You know, I mean, I live this weird semi-bohemian lifestyle.
Semi-bohemian.
You're
the neurotic, uptight bohemian.
Exactly. But I mean, I work freelance jobs and stuff because I don't want to be at the job I have.
And I
just get enough to scrape by so I can work.
Do not want health insurance.
I don't want health insurance. I don't want 401ks. I don't want this. I want to be still doing creative things. But at a certain point within the last couple years, a lot of those goals have changed. I'm not writing as many scripts anymore. I'm writing these personal essays. I'm doing podcasts. I'm trying to find ways to utilize my voice more.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things that... What I think is most scary about it is I'm like, oh, maybe I should have done those things at like 27 instead of like 33, you know? I should have thought, but you don't think
but
about
it. But also you're
that.
Not ready. You sometimes need the timing. You
That's
need the
journey.
Experiences too.
Yeah.
And otherwise we might not be sitting here today.
Yeah. Right. So that's what I connected to in that idea, you know, in the abstract. And luckily I had some understanding of the music world, and also I have friends who are somewhat successful musicians.
Bruce Springsteen?
Yes.
I mean, best friend.
Right.
Bruce. Uncle
yeah.
Bruce.
Yeah, I wouldn't need to be writing books if I was best friends with
John,
Springsteen.
John, let me tell you something. When I was growing up.
Right. I'd be his unofficial biographer or something.
You'd be his tuner.
Yeah.
Right.
So In any case, you know, that was kind of what clicked with me about the idea, and I started writing these treatments, you know, and for anyone who's not, you know, fluent with film parlance, a treatment is basically kind of a extended synopsis of a movie.
Junior novelization.
Yeah, before you write the screenplay, maybe you write a treatment to save yourself some time to see if your ideas are working on the
story
page.
Works, yeah.
So Nate and Lorenzo suggested to me, why don't you take these two characters that you'd come up with, who are the main characters of the what eventually became the book, and write a short story about them? And I said, great. So that sounds like a fun exercise. Well, little did I know that 6 months later I would hand them this novella, what turned out to be this novella, and then spend the next 2 years revising it and turning it into what was ultimately published.
Nice.
And the movie never got made.
And why don't you just before we get into how it got published, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you said, these two characters. So, one of them, by the way, one terrific name,
yes,
Will.
Yes, he's named after you. And in fact, I didn't even think of that until today. I was thinking, that's so funny that, you know, you reading the book and...
I had to keep seeing my names. And there's one, at the end of one of the chapters, the female character, Leah.
Leah, yeah.
She goes through this whole thing, like, saying his name in sentences.
Yes,
and
yes.
Thought of myself, that okay. Entire paragraph.
I think Will is going to be a theme in today's episode.
So the main characters are Will, who is in his mid-30s. He's a somewhat successful Brooklyn musician who's been playing music since he was 18. And basically, over that time, he's managed to amass kind of a small but devoted following in the greater New York area, but you know, a lot of his friends have kind of transcended that level of success and have gone on to do bigger things.
Or dropped out
altogether, exactly.
And just start a family.
Yes, which, as it so happens, is what his drummer, Michelle, who also happens to be his ex-girlfriend, does. She's now married to someone else. She gets pregnant, and that's the end of the band. And so he's at this crossroads where he doesn't know what to do. He has an offer to play bass for a much more successful band, but at his heart, he's a songwriter. He's a frontman. He's someone who wants to be performing his own material. And yet, he looks around, and all of his peers have moved on from that stage. And so he, you know, he wonders, can he get a new band going? Will he still be relevant? And then, on the other hand, you have this character of Leah, who's a real estate agent in New York, who's a little older than Will is, and is also kind of unhappy with her career. It's not something she's passionate about. She's also at a crossroads in her life, and the two of them meet and begin this kind of tenuous relationship,
yes.
I guess you could say.
A lot of sex.
Yeah, there's a lot of sex.
Yeah, people, buy the book. There's a lot of sex, especially early on in this book.
Yeah, yeah.
That I don't mean... it's more than that,
yes.
But, you know, we got to get...
Yes, you got to sell the sizzle.
It's not meant to be like an erotic book at all, but...
It's
The Flood Man, an erotic novella.
Yeah.
It's not, but, you know, our audience, I got to speak to
them. It's adult. It's a solid PG-13, people.
Yeah.
It'd be R.
It'd be R, I think, yeah. But in any case, yeah. So these, you know, they come from very different backgrounds. And initially, a lot of what gets them together is this mutual physical attraction.
Right. There was also, and we talked about people dropping out of the scene and dropping out of things. It's so funny because whenever I go home to Long Island, I see my friends, and just about all of them, they have the house. And they're shitting out kids, and you know they, and you know, and I mean they seem happy enough, but I know also they all kind of... Oh my God, I hope they're all listening. They all gave up on their dreams,
right?
And I know some of them look at me out here, and I think like out here, like my life is shit, nothing's working out. But they still kind of look at me like, you know, Will's out there and he's doing this and that, and it's
that tinge of jealousy.
And there was a lot of the kind of that I feel in the book too, where he sees these other people who are
also people who are younger than him, and like you said about the podcast, so maybe I should have done this at 25.
Yeah.
It's that idea too of almost missed opportunities or closing windows.
Yes,
you know.
Yes,
and also the music moving on. One element that I liked was, when there's one scene where he's at the club and he's hearing the music and he can't identify almost with the music of today, and there's always that idea of that the pop culture that you grew up with that defined your time is the right pop culture. And it's not. I always say that, you know, every generation, almost every decade now, has its own finds its own form of expression.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make anything better or worse than anything else. It's just there's the form of expression that speaks to what that generation needs, what that era needs. You know, I think if Mozart had been born today, he would have been a genius, you know, he would have been a genius rock musician, you know.
He would have been Skrillex or something
like that. Right, that talent would have, that talent would have manifested itself in whatever the form of, you know, expression. You know, genius is born every day,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
Yeah, but there's this calcification process where we put our walls up, we circle our wagons, and we say, no, it's only the Beatles, or it's only the Rolling Stones, or it's only... You know, in my case, Counting Crows. No, just kidding.
They were your Beatles.
That's Adam Durowitz was my, you know.
He was
John
your Bob Dylan.
He was my Bob Dylan.
Well, I think when you're young, that's when you're most susceptible to being influenced by things.
Well, because your brain is stupid.
You have this kind of, it's naive, but in a beautiful way, where you have a very pure connection to things.
Right.
You know, if you're not just chasing trends or trying to be popular or listen to what your friends are listening to, when you read a book, see a movie, hear a band, it's affecting you on a very kind of primitive level.
Well, and also when I was,
jaded.
I was younger, I liked more movies and stuff, and sometimes I go back and I look at what I might have liked, and some of them I still like, and I probably am bringing a lot of that old childhood feelings to, but others I'm like, ugh. But, you know, it's funny, music was never, I mean, not
You're not a big music guy.
I'm not a big... And that always feels weird to say because I'm listening to music constantly, but I'm not a big music guy at the same time, especially in comparison to film and television and stuff like that. Oh, 90%...
You're a Broadway guy, a lot of
yeah,
theater.
You know me.
Yeah, I'm a lot of Chekhov and Ibsen.
Yeah, I have 90%, I feel, of the music that I got into in college and right after college and stuff was from women I was dating. And I remember the first time I heard the White Stripes, for example. I was having sex with my girlfriend Elizabeth at the time, and that was just playing on a CD she had, and I remember pausing while having sex, and I'm like, who is this? And she goes, they're the White Stripes. And I'm like, oh. And the second we were done, I'm like, that was really good. Can I borrow that? Can I, like, you know?
Similar to me, I know the entire Rent soundtrack by heart because the girl I used to date, that's all she would listen to. Never seen the show, but know all of Rent by heart.
You didn't take to it like I took to the White Stripes.
No, different.
It's funny you mentioned the White Stripes because they were actually sort of the paradigm for Will's band.
I thought
it's a guy and a girl.
A drummer.
Yes, exactly.
I have a question about the publishing because this is a book. I'm holding it. It's bound.
It's a tangible thing,
people. Tell me a little bit about either the publishing company or the process of getting this actually published.
So, rather fortuitously, at the same time that I had just finished writing the first draft of the novella, a guy I went to college with named Kevin Stanek got in touch with me out of the blue. I hadn't spoken to him in years and asked, you know, what I was up to and if we could get together for beers. And he had a script that he wanted me to read.
Got it.
And give him notes on, which he had actually co-written with another author who was published by Black Hill Press, as well as some bigger publishers that I'm forgetting right now, a guy named Ryan Gaddis, who we also went to school with. So the three of us ended up getting together, and in the course of the conversation, I mentioned that I had written this novella. And he said, that's funny, I'm actually starting a publishing company. He had spent 10 years doing an art magazine.
Yeah.
And decided to get into publishing and said, I actually want to do a publishing company, an imprint that specializes in novellas.
Huh.
Interesting.
And so he said, I'd love to take a look at it if you're open to that. And I said, sure. So I sent it to him. He was the first person I gave it to. And I'm one of the three books that got published by his imprint.
What are the odds you write a novella and then somebody says, I'm starting a specific novella?
It was a very weird confluence of events.
So you hear that, people? Stay in school. Go to college. You don't know who you're going to meet.
And it's true. Yeah.
That's why I try to meet everybody. I try to meet them to help my career or to possibly sleep with them. Neither of these things are working.
If they fall into the male bucket, it's career. If they fall into the female bucket, it's... bucket.
Neither of these things are working out for me, though. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But no, that's fantastic.
It was pretty cool.
How is the company, how's the company doing? How are sales?
Well, Fortune 500.
Well, they've been doing well, from my understanding, they've been doing well in the sense that they have a very regimented schedule. So every quarter they release three novellas. And the kind of broader concept behind it is that they have a different artist, and Kevin having run this art magazine and
he's got
creating
access
a bunch
to
of
a
shows,
lot of...
he knows a lot of artists. So each set of books has cover art by the same artist.
Oh.
So it's like in my case it was three books all by one artist. Then the next quarter he releases another three novellas with artwork by a different artist. And so he'll do an event that promotes it, that's kind of a, you've got the art crowd, you've got also the literary crowd, and so, from that standpoint, it's
kind of
exciting.
He's got a lot of different avenues.
Yes, it's kind of an exciting and fresh...
Should finish my novella.
Yeah, exactly. I would be happy to make an introduction for you.
Perfect.
Well, listen, people. I really enjoyed the book, and I think that anyone out there particularly who is in that creative mindset and,
anyone who's ever had dreams that were crushed.
Which should be all of you people out there. I think you'll really enjoy the book. I think you should pick it up. So how can they pick it up?
Well, you can go to blackhillpress.com, or it's also on Amazon. It's available as a paperback or as an ebook.
I found my copy on bedbathandbeyond.com, strangely.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, 20%
off coupon. I hadn't realized that we had cornered that demographic.
That's the
as
beyond.
Well. Yeah. Exactly.
Indie novellas,
right?
Also.
Now you you said you could get it as an ebook. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, for the Kindle.
And you know what though? I say buy a comp. Buy. I like having a hard
Kill
copy.
Kill a tree.
Of
buy a book.
Exactly. I like having a hard copy of things, and I sit at Starbucks, and I sit there, and I read the book.
And I leer at women.
Maybe a little bit of that, too. In between chapters, I peek over. Can't do that as well with your tablet, buddy. Buy a book.
Right. Well, and I should also mention, if you want to buy a physical copy of it, I believe it will be for sale at the Last Bookstore in downtown L.A. if you're local.
I love that place. And
it's a very cool place, and we're actually going to be doing a reading there on Saturday, August 3rd at 7. And it's going to be the release of the next set of novellas, and all of the Black Hill Press authors will be doing a short reading from their books. And I'll be there, and so will a bunch of other people.
So you know what? If you have
August 3rd.
So Last Bookstore, on 6th and Spring in downtown L.A.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Look, if you're a good listener of the podcast, you've already found out this information from our Facebook page and have probably bought the book. But if you haven't, go down there August 3rd. Here are a couple of passages read from it as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. You might find some cool stuff.
And there'll be, like you said, there'll be other authors of some of the other books there.
Yeah, who knows? You might meet some women to mingle with.
Will
you know?
Bruce Springsteen be there?
He will not, unfortunately.
Damn it.
He's probably doing something that's going to move millions of people and
right.
make him millions of dollars.
Well, you want to, not that you have a say in the matter, but do you want to break down some topics of the week, some pop culture topics that are going on?
I don't know. How can I contribute?
Well,
start by not saying no.
Okay, sure, I would love to. Yes, let's
Excellent,
do it.
Let's do this.
Comic-Con happened this week. John, have you ever been to Comic-Con?
I've not.
Neither have we.
No. This falls into that, like, Coachella, Burning Man bucket.
But this feels like more, like, my people?
Not really. You're not... I don't think either one of us are nerds in the... We're not, like, comic book geeks. We're not video game geeks.
We're not pop culture geeks.
Yeah, but my problem with Comic-Con is that at this point it just feels like a way for the studios and the television studios and film studios to just shovel their product down your throats. It's like,
yes.
Here you go. Here's things we know you'll like. I'm going to take a Superman logo and a Batman logo and you're going to shit your pants. That's Comic-Con.
I want that stuff shoveled at me to an extent.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems to be working.
Well-ish.
No, I don't know. It seems like it's getting more and more popular every year.
It is
degree.
Getting popular. I mean, the people who have gone forever complain that it's too big now.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is you end up talking to a very tiny sliver, to a tiny demographic, and we've discussed this. Movies like Pacific Rim, they don't do well because
right.
you get into this feedback bubble where it's like, it's going to be huge. The Comic-Con nerds love it, and then but it's only them.
Scott Pilgrim was another classic.
Yeah,
example.
Or Snakes on a Plane.
Well, you know what? Every... This time of year, every weekend, I'm like, why didn't we go to Comic-Con? Why didn't we go to Comic-Con? And
a
year from now, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm like, I should have went to Comic-Con. I guess I realized, though, because my big sci-fi thing right now is Orphan Black. It's a show me and Sean are obsessed with.
Okay.
And I was watching their Twitter feed, and I'm like, oh, it would have been so cool to see all the Orphan Black stuff. And then I realized I just watched all the videos on my computer, and I guess it would have given me the same effect in a lot of ways. I don't know, or maybe not. I guess maybe I realized from watching those videos I didn't want to go to Comic-Con. I wanted to go to an Orphan Black con.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, even if you meet the ad, let's say you meet Tatiana Maslany. You're meeting her in a Q&A type situation or an autograph signing type situation. What do you think's going to happen? I mean, is my life really going to be so different because I shook her hand once? I'd rather, like, meet her because, hey, we have friends and we can hang out and have a conversation, not...
Do we have friends who know her?
No, but, you know, work on it. But you know what I mean. It's like, what will that really add to my life of being in the same room as her?
When I was younger, I was... I mean, I still am to a degree. I really love horror movies. And I used to go to the Fangoria Weekend of Horrors when I was growing up. I don't know if you guys have heard of this.
Yeah, I remember the magazine and everything.
Yeah. And, and I remember getting to meet Dario Argento,
nice.
Which was a big deal for me.
Asia's father.
Yes, exactly. I don't like his current movie so much, but his 70s and 80s movies are amazing. And I got to tell him that to his face, and he shook my hand, and I didn't have a this was back before cell phones.
Before we all had cameras.
Yes, so I didn't have a camera.
So it never happened.
So I didn't have evidence of it, but the next day I went with my dad. He brought his camera. I was 15 at the time. And he took a photo of us, and Dario remembered me from the day before.
Oh, nice.
And I was so moved by that. I thought, you know, this was, as a 15-year-old, you know, I had a few heroes, and he was definitely one of them. And so that, you know, I can relate in that degree, you know, to that extent.
There are certain people I admire. There are certain people I see. Like, here's the thing. Like, I really like George Clooney, but I don't necessarily feel a need to approach George
and
Clooney.
And let him know that you like him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are certain people, like if, for some reason, if I was at a restaurant and Woody Allen was sitting next to me, he's on a level of admiration that if I know he's heard it a million times, but if I didn't say anything, I'd feel worse.
You would
worse.
Kick yourself or something?
Yeah, even though I know I won't
seize the opportunity?
Yeah, I won't get anything out of it really, probably, other than that, but I'd still have to.
So question, Will, if you went to Comic-Con, would you dress up?
Well, that's the other thing. No.
You wear a Clockwork Orange t-shirt.
I would wear a t-shirt, the usual. I'd wear an Orphan Black t-shirt. You know, I can't, I don't even like dressing up for Halloween, so I can't dress up at Comic-Con. However, what I do think I would enjoy about Comic-Con is all the girls dressed up, all the cosplay or whatever. This is why...
Just a whole different level of creepy now.
This is why I should go. These women dressed up as, like, Pokemon or whatever the fuck they are.
You can actually go to Little Tokyo and save yourself the trip to San Diego and go to the mall there, and you can see these cosplayers roaming around.
You
really?
Can ask the girls if they want to see a kaiju?
They do karaoke at the mall in Little Tokyo.
We gotta do
this! Let's do this. All right, we're shutting down the podcast.
No, it's done. We're leaving. Well, one thing I did want to bring up, I guess the biggest news out of Comic-Con was this, making the Superman-Batman movie. This says two things to me. Well, it says one thing, actually. They don't think Superman can carry a movie by himself. Is that, right? What is this going to be? Like, how big of a role is Batman? Do we have any idea?
Apparently, when they did the announcement, the actor read a piece of dialogue that is from the Frank Miller... The Dark Knight, I guess, which is where Superman and Batman fight face off. And so they're thinking that will be the plot line. It's going to be an adversarial story between the two of them before maybe they team up and, you know, kick some robot into the sun.
But this is being considered a Superman movie.
Yes, featuring Batman.
Because it's not like it's going
to... Because I think they need to give it time before they can restart the Batman franchise. So this is a way to keep the Batman character vital while building and developing their Superman franchise.
I think it's really just a cash grab.
And a cash grab.
It's how can we guarantee that we're going to make
$1 billion?
I think
they don't want to do what Sony's doing with the Spider-Man and just straight up shamelessly reboot the same story again.
So you just throw Batman into other movies.
I mean, how many times do we really need to establish Batman again? Do we need to see his parents die? You
I
need
don't
to say
need
I'm Batman.
See. Yeah,
that's
we
all
know
need.
Batman.
He just shows up. At this point, he's part of the pop culture landscape.
Here's a problem. I'm rooting for Batman. It's a Superman movie. I'm rooting for Batman. Kick his ass, Batman.
Well, let's see how it comes out. We don't know what it's going to be exactly. If they were really daring, let's go with like a black Batman.
Black man.
Black man.
I'm all for that, too.
Yeah.
I want the black Batman. I want the black James Bond. This is all my white guilt coming out.
You want Idris Elba as James Bond.
I think he'd be a great James Bond.
He would be a cool Batman, too.
He would be a cool Batman.
Either him or Wayne Brady as James Bond.
Well, you know, speaking of superhero movies, this weekend we've got The Wolverine coming out.
Can't wait.
Fuck this movie. I just got an email inviting me to a free screening. I may or may not take them up on it because I am so fucking sick of Wolverine. All the X-Men movies, with the exception of First Class, which I would argue is the best X-Men movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
And he's only got, like, a funny cameo in that. All the other X-Men movies are basically Wolverine movies.
I wanted to see Magneto, the Nazi hunter movie. That was the movie I wanted to see.
And, you know, those are things that I loved about. Yeah. And I'm sick of Wolverine. Now he's hanging out in Japan. And what are they, like, samurais?
Silver
samurai. What is going on?
Well, this is based on a very popular Wolverine graphic novel as well. It's basically the Karate Kid 2 of Wolverine movies. It goes to Japan. First of all, can we point out that Hugh Jackman is 50 and looks better than any human being has any right to look at age 50?
Hugh Jackman is older than Wilford Brimley was when he did the movie Cocoon.
Wow.
Just throwing that out there for you. I think that says less about how good Hugh Jackman looks and more about how bad Wilford Brimley has always looked.
It's the diabetes. It ages him. I don't know. This movie it looks fine.
Are you going to see this Wolverine?
I'm not going to see it.
I think I'm making my last stand and not seeing, especially that last Wolverine movie was shitty. So I was thinking, we got to tell the people out there to see other movies, see better movies that are coming out or already out.
Like Batman and Superman.
Exactly. So I was thinking of some of the stuff that was out this coming weekend, and here are some things that I think you should see instead. Only God Forgives.
This movie.
I think anyone that would love The Wolverine is going to hate Only God Forgives.
And vice versa.
But yes, exactly.
And that's why they should go see it.
Yeah.
I know you saw this movie. This is a new Nicholas Winding
Refn
film.
Yes, Nicholas Refn, the director of Pusher 2 and Valhalla Rising.
Yes.
This is his second collaboration with Ryan Gosling, where Ryan Gosling plays a borderline catatonic drug dealer / underground Muay Thai boxing ring owner in Bangkok who has to deal with the death of his brother and his insane mother.
Now, you saw this film also.
I did.
Me and Sean loved it. What did you think?
It's not my favorite of Refn's movies, but I definitely appreciated the weirdness of it.
It's a really strange film.
Yeah.
You want strange, you want violent, go see this movie.
Yeah. And that's kind of part of my problem with it, is that the ending really becomes just a succession of retributions, one after the other.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like murder set pieces, basically.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know,
that's how you get off. It's all these scenes structured around these terrible violent acts.
Yeah.
Kristen Scott Thomas gives a fantastic performance.
Yes.
Also in it as Ryan Gosling's mother, and there's clearly some Oedipal things going on.
There's some deranged shit going on in this movie, let me tell you. But when we say violent, we mean violent.
We don't mean Wolverine cutting someone up with his claws. We mean
violent and lingering violence. Slow, meditative violence.
It forces you to watch it. What is your favorite film of his? Mine is Drive.
I like Valhalla Rising a lot.
Okay, Valhalla Rising.
Yeah.
And mine is Drive. I'm obsessed with Drive. I've saw Drive 3 times in the theater, and I've probably seen it at least 3 times since. Another film out there that I really enjoyed, as much as you can enjoy a movie that, you know, is hard-hitting, Fruitvale Station. Have you seen Fruitvale Station?
Not yet.
It's very powerful. This is the story, and this really resonates after the Trayvon Martin stuff and the Zimmerman trial. It's the story of this man, Oscar Grant, who on New Year's Day 2009 was shot by police, completely innocent, wasn't doing anything. There was a fight that had broken out, and he kind of got unjustly accused by the police, and they shot him. This isn't a spoiler alert because the film opens with the actual cell phone footage of the real event.
Oh, wow.
And then we go and watch him throughout the whole last day of his life. And it's one of these very human films. We just are kind of following someone through their day, but it's very emotional, very powerful. Michael Jordan.
Well, is he called by Michael B. Jordan?
Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah.
Not the basketball player. But Michael B. Jordan. He, like you said, The Wire, and he was in Chronicle. He plays Oscar Grant, and he really adds... It's not just making this guy a saint, also. I mean, we find out he cheated on his girlfriend. We find out that he's dealt drugs. Like, he's not a saint, but he's very human. He's just like all of us, a flawed human who didn't deserve to die.
A cheating drug dealer.
He didn't deserve to die. And I saw it on a Monday afternoon. The theater wasn't that crowded because, you know, who's free to go to the movies besides me at 3 p.m. on a Monday afternoon? But there was, you could tell there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It's that kind of a movie. This is going to get Oscar consideration. Don't see The Wolverine. See this. Are you going to see it?
Yeah, after that review, of course.
I want to see it. It's definitely on the list. I got a lot of things I want to see this year, but... It's not high on my list, but I know it's good. I know I'll enjoy it. I think it takes a certain mindset. It's like, what do I want to do this afternoon? Oh, let's go watch this.
Well, it's one of those movies that probably gets the bad rap that some movies get where it's like, oh, it feels like it's going to be homework. Yeah. Like, I know I have to see it because it's powerful, but it's going to emotionally drain me, and do I really want to deal with it? See, I'm one of those people, I always want to deal
with
that.
You like doing your homework.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who, like, has United 93 on loop in his home.
Yeah,
I'm like, it's so emotionally powerful, and I like feelings.
Yeah. Fuck.
Also, this weekend, I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard nothing but great things. Woody Allen's got a new film, which I think we're all going to go see, I assume.
Yeah, maybe. I've heard mixed things.
Really?
I've heard Kate Blanchett is great in it, but the movie itself is a little out of touch with reality.
Well, I mean, Woody Allen is a man of the people.
He writes on a word processor still.
Right. And he only got that in, like, 2003.
No, he doesn't write on a word processor. That's right. He calls computers word processors.
Oh.
And he writes on a typewriter. He does the scripts on a typewriter.
And he cuts out to revise. Yeah, he cut out words and paste it.
Oh, wow.
And he, because... When they asked him, do you use a computer? He goes, no, I don't use word processors. That's what he said. Also, they asked him about, like, stand-up comedy and stuff, because Louis C.K. is in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, I wasn't familiar with Louis C.K.
How did he come on his radar?
He was watching a scene from something Louis C.K. did with Bobby Cannavale, and he was thinking of casting Bobby Cannavale.
Oh,
and
wow.
He goes, who's this other guy in the scene? This guy's phenomenal. And it was Louis C.K. And then they asked him about stand-up comedy, and he referenced, he mentioned a stand-up comic who's a guy in his 80s who is like some Catskills comic that he's like, oh, I just saw him do a show. So Woody, he's so out of touch, and yet I still find his films relatable to me. And I feel like a bad Woody Allen movie is like what they say about pizza or sex. A bad Woody Allen movie is still
Christian and Jane Scorpion.
It's still kind of good for me. It's still kind of good.
Well, listen, if you don't like it, don't worry. There'll be a new one next year.
That's right.
That's right. Do you go to see all his films, or do you?
I kind of pick and choose. I mean, the last one that I saw was Midnight in Paris, which I actually didn't like that much.
Really?
I'm one of the outliers on that one.
You're a big Scoop fan, huh?
Yeah, I love Scoop.
Hollywood ending.
The last one that I loved of his was, I think, Vicky Cristina.
I love Match Point.
I love Match Point, too.
Sexy. The fact that this man came out with such a sexy, dirty movie, I really enjoyed it.
You know what struck me about it was I remember it was the first time I'd seen him do kind of conventional coverage in any of his movies. Cuts. It was weird. He had the little vignettes at the beginning where it'd be like a 15-second scene of Jonathan Rhys-Meyers reading or something.
You mentioned sexy, and this gives me transition to another movie that I'm going to see over The Wolverine this week.
The Andrew Marchand story?
The To-Do List, which maybe is the Andrew Marchand story. It stars Aubrey Plaza of Parks and Recreation. And this is basically Aubrey Plaza's character. She needs to have sex and cross all these things off her sexual checklist.
She's like a type A, uptight A. She's like an A-plus student that goes to college.
Yeah, and she's going to go to college, and before she goes, she wants to check all these things off and make sure she's experienced them. And honestly, when I first read about this film, I said, well, this sounds like every sexual fantasy I've had since Parks and Recreation came on the air. I have not hid my love of Aubrey Plaza on this podcast because I love women who just seem like they would treat me awfully. But this got me thinking, and also your book got me thinking, because there was a moment you know, Will has some sexcapades in the book. I like saying Will had some sexcapades.
Uh-huh.
Will has some sexcapades in the book. And there was one line where he said something about if he has sex with this one girl, it'd be the first time he had sex with, like, two different girls in one day.
Right, right.
So it got me thinking, between that and the to-do list, of my own to-do list or our own to-do lists. So I have to ask. I got to put you on the spot. Is there something that you need to, not that you're necessarily going to, but that you would think to set check off your sexual checklist?
I have to be honest and say I can't think of anything at the moment.
Because you lived that rock and roll lifestyle, and you did it all.
Right. No, actually, I didn't do half of the things that are in the book, but...
he did the bad half.
But, yeah, I don't know. You'll have to come back to me. Let me think about it.
Sure. Pretty sure I haven't been with a black girl? Can I say that?
No, but that doesn't surprise me that you haven't.
I tend to prefer, you know, little... brunette Jewish girls.
I actually prefer that too.
Yeah.
But I have had sex with multiple black girls, and I feel there's a bit of reverse racism where I feel like I'm a cooler guy because of it. Where I'm like, I'm with a black girl, you know. Which is, I don't know.
No, it's good. We'll put it on your tombstone.
Yeah.
Will Link.
Will.
Friend, humorist, had sex with black chicks.
I'll tell you what, I dated this girl, first girl I ever dated, this girl, Randy, Jewish girl.
Randy.
And we dated for quite some time, years. And, you know, I had this, like, kind of innocent high school mentality to the whole thing. And she was like, at one point, she was like, hey, we should throw another girl in the mix.
Oh, wow.
And me being some, like... less sexually experienced than her, like, young, like, in-love high school guy. I'm like, no, all I want to do is be with you. Well, we broke up, but we continued to have sex because that's a thing that happens. And I remember one time going, hey, remember when you... And she's like, no,
window's closed.
I mean, I guess I'd like to try that. I'm up for anything. I'll throw myself into the middle of an orgy. I don't care.
I barely know what to do with one girl. I'm not going to do two.
Well, that's...
Someone's just going to sit there.
That's
it'll
why,
probably be me. Yeah.
That's why I'll jump in the orgy, so someone else could take care of someone else while I'm doing something else. And what constitutes an orgy? Do you have to be having sex with everyone involved? Or is an orgy simply people, like, say, in the same... bed having sex with other people?
I think there has to be some level of swapping. Like, if it's just two couples and you're each just doing your thing with that person, I don't think it's...
Because I've had sex with someone on a bed where two other people were having sex. But that's not an orgy.
No, I think if you had swapped...
So, John, we're coming back to you. You got anything?
I mean, it's tough to be put on the spot about this.
I know. It's an awful thing.
I can advise you about a bad idea.
Go ahead.
All right. If this is ever on your list of things to do, I would cross it off having sex on top of a water tower.
Okay.
I don't think we have in Los Angeles.
Which is something I did, and it doesn't feel very good. It's very uncomfortable, and you get really dirty because there's
filthy,
all that dust and debris and crud just on top of... a water tower, as one might expect.
I think I'm too neurotic to deal with almost any kind of outdoor sexual activity, in a way. Like, I'm afraid, like, I'll roll around. What, am I going to roll around in nature? I'm going to be filthy.
You're going to get a bug bite, and it's going to kill you.
Right, exactly.
The other thing that would be on my to-do list, Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
No,
ever.
That's not happening. Ever. Maybe if you go to Comic-Con, though, you can meet her and shake her hand, tell her what you like her work, and... yada, yada,
and I'll be
yada.
Like, you're on my to-do list.
Yeah,
Aubrey.
Next thing you know, she's back with you at the Comfort Inn in La Jolla.
Yeah, this is what going next year. We're doing it.
Hey, you ever see the inside of a Motel 6?
John, do you watch The Newsroom?
Nope.
I don't.
Oh, John, I thought you said Sean.
Well, you just answered for me correctly.
Yes, there you go.
I don't watch The Newsroom.
No, you watched the first couple episodes.
Yes.
And then you checked out.
Completely.
I watched... the entire first season.
How'd that go?
It wasn't very good, but I kept watching. And it had, like, weird women problem. Like, the women, like, they're supposed to be brilliant women, but they're befuddled by technology, and they're befuddled by every man, and they're befuddled by just being women. It's weird.
Like Aaron Sorkin.
I've heard that there are actual pratfalls in it, if I'm not mistaken.
There are.
Involving women.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like you would think...
None of these things enticed me to watch the show.
And, you know, second season started 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, well, I'm gonna give it a second shot. I don't know why. Maybe because the main character of that is Will. A lot of Wills on the podcast today.
Triumph of the Wills.
Will McAvoy is the newscaster played by Jeff Daniels. And the show's not very good. And I realize I hate watch it. I'm watching the show simply to then later talk about how I have a problem with it. And I notice a lot of people are doing this on a lot of like blogs I read and stuff. They just are obsessed with how earnest it is and obsessed with just all these weird things about it. But there are this other group of people who really actually like the show, like who don't see the flaws in it. And this is what pisses me off. Because these people, when I say, but the show isn't very good, they go, you know why it's good? It's the way the news should have been told. It's the way they should have reported the news back in 2010 and 2011. It's the way, I wish they were reporting the news that way. Well, here's the fucking problem, you people. That is the way the news that I was watching was being reported. Do any of you people ever watch something called Rachel Maddow? Do you people know who she is? Because she's reported the news the exact same way, but without the pretension that Will McAvoy brings. Hell, even before that, Keith Olbermann. Yeah, Keith Olbermann was bombastic, but you know what? He was less crazy bombastic than Will McAvoy. So that is why you, people who earnestly watch The Newsroom and think this show is good, are the enemy of the podcast. Fuck you, go watch MSNBC, because that's how things are being reported. You know, this is pissing me off, and I know I'm part of the problem, because I still watch the show, and I know there's a fine line between hate watch and actual watch, but I can't imagine people earnestly watching this thing.
That was a very specific enemy.
It was very specific. It was one of our most...
I'm watching you get there. You had to build to that place.
It was a very specific enemy, but they pissed me off nonetheless.
As someone who has not actually seen the show, I'm curious, is this Will character, do you think he's just a mouthpiece for the kind of things that Sorkin wishes he could say? Do you think that Sorkin has some sort of fantasy where he's actually like a Keith Olbermann?
Totally. I think Sorkin thinks that to a point, but then tries to dial it back by making Will a Republican. Like, this character's a Republican, but he's just so disgusted with where the Republican Party's at. So occasionally he'll go into some conservative tirade, or he'll go up against the rest of his producers about something conservative, like he's pro-death penalty, and he was going on this thing this past week. Also this past week, we got Will McAvoy's origin story.
Which is?
He was a lawyer, which I think we knew, but apparently the first time he ever did an anchoring job was on 9/11, because there was no one else, and he was there for 16 hours just reporting. And so they found a way this week on Newsroom to make 9/11 about Will McAvoy.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, it was, wasn't it?
It was.
You know, that's what Sorkin wishes.
It was about all us Wills. It was about Will from the Frontmen. It was about
Will Link.
It was about Will McAvoy. It was all... That's what 9/11 was
about.
Has
Will McAvoy slept with a black chick?
I'm sure he has.
Okay.
And I'm sure Will from the book has, too.
Yeah, probably.
Probably, if I would have to guess.
But yeah. I've slept with two.
Oh, look at you.
Oh, I'm...
Stop, keep my mouth shut. Weren't they both named Lindsay?
No.
Okay.
No, but I've slept with two Lindsays. But the point is...
So you'll still be watching The Newsroom this Sunday night?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is it? Is there anything you hate watch? Is there anything that you watch actively and you know you don't like, or you know is not good, but you feel this need to, like, this compulsive need to keep watching?
I can't say that there is. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Have you ever watched something you knew you would hate just because then you could at least be informed about it and hate it properly?
Like a reality show or something.
Not a television, but a movie, yeah. I'm trying to think what would be an example of that. But there are so many movies that I've consciously tried to avoid because I didn't either agree with them or I didn't think I would like them. I guess the most controversial of those would probably be Avatar. I had a feeling that I was not going to like it, and yet I went ahead and saw it anyway just so I could be righteous in my indignation.
And that was a movie that was such in the zeitgeist that you almost had to.
Well, I never saw Titanic.
What?
Yeah, I've never seen Titanic.
All right.
And that was a choice.
You like Titanic.
I like Titanic a lot. Titanic a lot. It's a good movie. Yeah, you're missing out.
That's what I've heard. So who knows? Maybe at some point.
Look, I mean...
Well, you're going to have to see The Wolverine when it becomes the biggest motion picture of all time.
Well, okay, I saw The Avengers. I didn't think I was going to like The Avengers, and I went ahead and saw it anyway.
It's charming.
And I didn't like it. I hated it, actually.
Do you not like superhero movies?
I like some of them. I like the first Iron Man.
Fantastic
Four
2.
I like Spider-Man 2. I like The Dark Knight. Yeah. I liked X-Men First Class for what it was.
Yeah, I think that's a fun superhero
movie.
Daredevil.
What else? Oh, I hated that
Ghost
movie.
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. That movie. Spirit of Vengeance.
Yeah, hated that movie.
Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer.
I hated that movie.
10 minutes
I
of that
saw
on,
that, too.
I caught about 10 minutes of that on FX. It's not good.
See, I've seen a fair amount of these kinds of movies, but yeah, my heart does not instantly lend itself to being a superhero fan.
My friend Nick,
you got to earn it.
He can't deal with the level of suspension of disbelief of superheroes. He has problem. He can't take like people like, you know, like he'll look at Captain America. He's like, I can't take this guy serious just the way he's dressed mm-hmm. and presents himself. Like he just can't get past that. He liked The Dark Knight because I think that was maybe grounded in some more, because that's just a really good crime drama
right.
with great performances. But he has trouble getting past certain.
Right. It's heat as a superhero movie.
Yep. Yeah. I always like to end with something odd. And there's this big... And you as a writer, I want to get your take on this. There's this big push now. Maybe it's not that big, but it's big enough that
huge groundswell.
I found multiple articles about it. It's big enough for there to be multiple articles on the internet, and we know how discerning the internet is. That they want to replace the word the with a letter that represents the.
I have not heard this.
They want to replace, and maybe when we take the photo, I'll draw it out so people know, because this isn't necessarily...
Maybe for our Vine, you'll
like,
draw
is
it.
Is this like the artist formerly known as Prince, but with a noun?
It's like kind of a T.
Or a pronoun?
It's kind of a T and an H, like, combined into uh-huh. one letter.
We'll Vine and, it. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll Vine it. And so is this just being lazy, or is it an evolution of language?
I think it's stupid. Why fix something that's not broken? What's wrong with the?
Because
I would have to change the title of my book.
Yeah.
It would have to be Symbol Frontman.
I think it's a fantastic idea. I got no time for this HE shit. Come on, people. I don't have time for this.
But we're going to have to replace all the keyboards. This is too big of an undertaking.
We're just saying that three letters are too much to type?
Yeah, and every three-letter word we should just combine down to a little hash mark.
Well, I can see why. Yeah. The is so commonly
used. Come on, we have to and, too.
And is...
Well, you
and,
do the ampersand.
And you could do that, but would probably be next on the list.
There's a but and the can. Got all of them. I just want symbols.
R, just put the letter R.
R, yeah.
Like when
on.
You're texting.
You?
So, yes, we're devolving then. That's a de-evolution.
No, we're getting smarter. We're simplifying. We're streamlining the code.
I have to say, that's a huge pet peeve of mine. And
debugging
humanity.
In fact,
I stopped dating a woman specifically because she would text R and the symbol, or the letter U and everything. I couldn't deal with it.
Man.
You are for your... I couldn't deal.
I mean, I don't... And to be fair, I don't like that, and I don't do that in my text. I try to write out the whole word. But
you understand it.
But I would certainly date women who did that. And maybe I'd regret it. Maybe that's another tip for your to-do list.
Yeah.
Don't feel the need
Don't
to sleep with women who use the letter U instead of the word U.
Well, I didn't say sleep with, but date, certainly. We can make a distinction there.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant. I think we need to simplify the code. Too many letters. Too many words.
So how are they going to do that? How are they going to do this? Are they just going to add a thing on the keyboard?
You're going to have to buy a kit. And you're going to have to get a sticker, and we're going to have to reprogram it. So let's see here. One of these keys, what do I never use? I never use the little bracket with the little pokey thing. You got the square bracket, and then you got the bracket that's got a little bit of a butt on it. We don't need that one. We get rid of that. Put the symbol. The symbol and the symbol.
The.
You hold
the
shift
the
and that. Shift and that, we're good. I don't need some of this shit. Come on, what do I need a little...
But I feel like just saying that, instead of saying the anymore, well, I guess you will, but there's going to be that period of transition where everybody's going to be saying the symbol, instead of just saying the. And the time that you've saved in typing it is going to be negated by how much longer it takes to actually say the symbol.
Our 11th grade history teacher's name is Ed Gelb, and he used to write E period Gelb on the board, and my friend Robert asked him once, why do you abbreviate Ed?
That's pretty needless.
Yeah.
Well,
the symbol. It's good.
I'm with Frechette on this one.
All right, well, you guys will be wasting time typing needless letters.
You're going to write everything so much quicker than us.
Oh, man. Like blazing. The flash. My texts will be even quicker than they are now.
I can see this is going to catch on, though, for something like Twitter.
Yeah,
where you're limited with... Because that is the... I've only done it a couple times, but even with Twitter, I try so hard not to, like, use just an R for something. But sometimes it's like, I want to tweet this thing, and I'm like... two things off, and you know
who's the most who has the most ingenious use of Twitter, I think, is the director Mike Figgis.
Oh,
he writes tweets by hand, so he'll actually write out what he wants to say, and he's not restricted to 140 characters. He'll take a photo of it and then tweet the photo of the message.
That's not a bad idea for some of these longer things I have.
It's pretty ingenious.
Hey, why not just write a blog entry and post it and have people read his blog?
You could, but
stop gaming the system.
It's a lot of
man who wants a the symbol.
I gotta look up his. I'm not following him. I have to look up his Twitter.
Maybe that's why
that.
Mike Figgis isn't directing a superhero franchise.
What's the last thing Mike Figgis directed?
Something. I can't remember the name of it, but something very obscure. But I think the last thing that I actually paid attention to him directing was a movie called Hotel.
Okay.
Oh, no. He directed a movie called Cold Creek Manor, which I never saw, but which had Dennis Quaid and Sharon Stone in it. Yeah.
I never saw it.
That was his big. That was like a studio film, right?
That was his big studio movie.
How'd
and
that
then it tanked, and then he's, I think, been making kind of obscure movies since
then.
No,
he's just been photographing tweets.
And yes.
Well, what have we learned here today? We learned what Mike Figgis is up to. We learned about a terrific book. And we learned that we got to get you in bed with a black chick.
Ah, dear. Not going to hear the end of this.
John.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I would say, I have to say, this is my virginal podcasting experience.
Really?
I've never done a podcast before or been on one before.
Marked it off your to-do list.
So, exactly. I was just going to say, this was my to-do list, was being on a podcast, and I've just crossed it off.
Were we gentle with you? Were we...
You were. I hope I wasn't too awkward and shy.
No, you were open. Okay. You know, we didn't get into any sexual deviancies that you have deep in the recesses of your mind, but maybe next time.
That's why you had to bring the booze. You had to liquor up a little bit.
That's right. Yeah. Next time, yes.
So before we go, plug where people can get this book. Tell us all about it again one more time.
So it's called The Front Man. It's available on Amazon in paperback or ebook for your Kindle. You can get it through blackhillpress.com, which is the publisher. And then once again, August 3rd at 7 at the Last Bookstore in downtown L.A., we're going to have a reading and a release party for three more novellas through the publisher.
And you're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at John Frechette, JonFrechette.
And I'm
or you
sure
can just look at the podcast.
Well, follow him, and I'm sure you'll tweet some reminders about the show coming
up.
Yeah,
and
the
try to entertain you otherwise.
Yes. Sean.
You can follow me at Twitter at TheCarlosDanger.
Oh, my God.
Have you changed it?
Well, my handle's still at TheSeanDavid, but my name is Carlos Danger on Twitter, at least for the next 24 hours. I'm probably going to change it back. You can also like me on Facebook, and you can buy and read my book, only in digital version, though, unfortunately, Triumvirs, TRIUMVIRS. I will not be having a release party at the Last Bookstore, although that would be kind of sweet. And, yeah, that's
maybe
pretty much it.
One.
I got nothing coming up right now, but hopefully performing a show in August.
Hopefully soon. You can follow me at The Real Will Link. You can also listen to him every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on The PM Show with Larry Minetti, where I review movies. So in the upcoming weeks, you'll hear me talk about Fruitvale Station and Blue Jasmine, the new Woody Allen movie, and, all sorts of great stuff. You can also read reviews and articles of mine at the website U1 Can, spelled like the city in France.
Not U1 Cans, Maddie's new food website that she'll be starting.
Yeah, she's starting. Apparently, the person who runs that blog or website is going to start a website about food. So I'm sure when that happens, we'll plug that as well. I don't think I'll be writing. I could write about Taco Bell on it, because that's all
idea.
I want to talk about. I have no... I will have just performed something, so I don't even know why I'm saying that. But I've got a show booked in October, but hopefully I'll get something going before then.
Are you sure about that? Did you double-check?
Yeah, I'm triple-check. on the show next week, speaking of shows and storytelling, Kevin McGeehan, a very funny guy. He's got a podcast and a live show called Funny 'Cause It's True. Really good storyteller. I saw him perform down at Tattletales about a month ago, and he told this really hysterical story. We're going to have him on to promote his show. And then the week after that, an interesting guest for us. We have this lovely young lady, Katie... I'm going to fuck up her name.
Oh, I don't even have it written in front of me.
Katie Markovich.
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 Yes.
Katie Markovich.
She is Soviet.
We'll find all that out. Now, I don't even know if she has anything to promote, but me and Sean both separately saw her perform at an improv show. And let me tell you what, these improv shows are rough sometimes. they're like we went to go see our lovely and talented friend, Christy Morales, but while we're watching, we saw this girl, Katie, who I thought was phenomenal. Sean thought she was phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
And we'd seen separate shows, and we both came together on this, and we're like, you know what? Let's have her on, and maybe we'll give her something to promote
with
this podcast.
She's absolutely hilarious, and, you know, you sometimes see people, and you're like, she's going to be something, and I feel like...
I feel that with her, too.
Yeah.
I've read all her blogs. Have you read her blogs?
Very funny.
Very funny. So now she's going to come on and be a total bust, I bet.
She's going to sit there, doesn't talk, and we're just going to be creepy and leery and peery.
Yes.
So this will be good.
Oh, us having a cute, funny girl on, are we going to be leery? So, John, thank you again.
Thank you, guys.
And
it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. For the Will Sean Podcast, I'm Sean David.
I'm Will Link.
And we're finished.
We're finished.